You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering Brenda Gail Lambert's case, and I will be joined by her sister, Christy. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Christy Kennedy to speak about her sister, Brenda Lambert, who vanished from a small town in West Virginia in July of 1992 on the day of her son's first birthday. And after her son's first birthday party, would simply vanish, leaving all her belongings and her car still parked in the driveway. Christy was just 14 years old when her sister vanished, but she has now become her advocate and has been on a mission to bring her home. Christy sits down with me and tells me about Brenda, who she was, what happened that summer day in 1992, and where the investigation is today. And of course, we're going to start at the best place. Who was Brenda? What was she like growing up?
Okay, well, Brenda was 8 years older than me, so I kind of missed out on, you know, a lot of her actual young childhood. But from everything, you know, that I was told, Brenda was a tomboy, and she still was carried into adulthood. She did love climbing trees and, you know, just being rough, kind of like a bully. Brenda was a prankster. She loved to pull pranks on people. Not mean pranks, but, you know, just those little aggravating pranks. she loved dogs and cream twirls. Brenda was her own person. She was kind of the life of the whole family. She was always fun. She, like, even into her adulthood, we were having water fights, and she would actually set us up to come outside just so she could get the water hose and, you know, drown us in it. she was really feisty too. So she was really, really sweet, but no one was going to run over. And yeah, I remember that from childhood, you know, when I was getting a little bit older, and she was like, you don't let them talk to you that way, you know? So she just kind of taught me to stand my ground too. In my teen years, she absolutely, even though she had a tomboy, she loved to apply makeup and do hair and to, you know, dress everybody in her, one of her dresses that she had. So she actually had a little girly side to her too.
Christy says despite the 8-year age gap between them, they were actually quite close sisters.
She was an adult by the time that, you know, I grew up enough to where my mom and dad would let me leave the house a lot. She was 22 when she disappeared, and I was 14. But yeah, she named her daughter after me. We had gotten really close, you know, in the last few years before, you know, she was murdered.
With Brenda and Christy's age gap, Brenda really was the adult in Christy's eyes, and she got to know her sister in her adult life, married to her husband, Raymond. I asked Christy how they met.
She met him through my brother. My brother said that they had worked together, and he had introduced them. She was 16.
Oh, wow. So they met when she was 16.
Yes. And I believe he was 20.
Christy was able to spend time with her sister, Brenda, in her home, in this adult life that she had. And she was able to see Brenda and Raymond's relationship. And I asked her what she thought of their relationship growing up.
From my perspective, I mean, that's what I based what I wanted on, you know, in my own relationships. I mean, she did not have to work. She was pretty much spoiled. Hand her money and tell us to go shopping. And I mean, she never wanted for anything. It was good. You know, they would cook together. I remember them slow dancing in the kitchen. like, you know, we would have water fights, and we just always had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We'd sit around the table and play Monopoly for hours. It was a really fun, romantic type relationship through a 14-year-old girl's eyes.
Brenda and Raymond would go on to have two children, first a daughter, and then second a little boy. Her daughter's name was Krista Dawn. Unfortunately, she passed away in 2020.
She had a really hard time with her mom's disappearance.
I imagine so. How old was she when her mom disappeared?
She was five.
She was five. Okay, so her and her brother are about 3 years apart.
They were 5 years. Well, about four.
About 4 years apart.
Four and a half, yeah.
Brenda was a wife, a mother. She had two children. She lived and worked within her community. She had friends and family. How does someone just vanish? I asked Christy to please take me back to the day that Brenda disappeared.
Well, you know, it is kind of like any other day. You know, she was busy, and he was too, getting everything together for their son's first birthday. Brenda was, she was always like in a, she was a quick person. So, you know, she moved around really fast, a lot. And, you know, we all showed up and we were all having a good time. And then all of a sudden, Brenda's mood just completely changed. Our first cousin, Tammy, was having an affair with Raymond. And she showed up unannounced and uninvited. Ooh. And that's when Brenda's whole mood just kind of plummeted.
Did she know about this affair? Did they know when it started? Was she always aware of it?
She had found out. And they had fought over it before, but it had went on for months. And I guess he just didn't want to quit. And then, you know, he started hitting her and things just kept escalating. And she eventually, that July that she disappeared, she went and filed a DVP on him for choking her. And 2 days later, he was never apprehended, and he found her again. And what she told my mom was that, you know, he was kind of throwing her off the wall, and he held a gun to her head and made her call and drop the DVP.
Was he ever physically abusive with Tammy?
Yes. She says he was.
Okay, so they both had that experience.
Yes.
What about the children? Was there ever physical abuse with the children, or was, or were they not old enough to remember?
They had told me no, but from multiple different sources that I have just recently, you know, has been talking to me and opening up, that there was, and they had told me that Tammy, you know, was a drunk. And Brenda's daughter had told us throughout the years that she could not have a picture of her mom in her room, or Tammy would come in and slam it down.
Not only did it seem that Tammy was involved in Brenda's marriage, we don't know exactly how long, but we do know that Tammy stayed very involved in Raymond's life and the children's life after Brenda's disappearance.
Tammy moved into Brenda's house a week after Brenda disappeared.
Wow, that's got to be hard for the family.
Oh, well, it was. It still is.
Did she essentially become mom to...
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, mom, cousin, something like that. Now she's mama cousin to Brenda's grandkids.
Wow. Okay. So she moved in, became very involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she took over Brenda's entire life. She gained everything that Brenda had, you know, right down to her underwear.
And she never questioned what was her role in questioning, I guess, where Brenda went and continuing this relationship when suddenly she's vanished.
Okay, well, she walked into the police station, like I said, a week later, about the same time that she moved into Brenda's house. And that's when we knew about her moving in there. We don't know. She could have been there the next day. We don't know. She walked into the police station and proudly proclaimed that she was Raymond's girlfriend and that Raymond had gave her Brenda's gun for protection against Brenda. You couldn't file a missing persons report until 48 hours, and it had to be the spouse. So Raymond did go and file. You know, 2 days later, Raymond went and filed the missing persons report. And when the law showed up, Tammy showed up too with, you know, my sisters. And she knew they couldn't get in. The cop was wanting to check the house. They couldn't get in. So Tammy knew to climb to the second story of Brenda's house because there was a window of Brenda's that didn't lock. She claims at one instance to not know that they were married. And then she claims again that Brenda told her she was finished with him, that she could have him. And then she'll say that she really didn't know Brenda. But if you don't really know somebody, I don't think you're going to know there's a certain window on their second floor of their house that doesn't lock.
I wanted to understand Brenda and Tammy's relationship. Were they close growing up? Were they like some cousins? Were they best friends? Or were they distant cousins that didn't really know each other?
No, we had been together a couple of times, but we didn't really know each other. But she had moved to the area about a year before Brenda disappeared. And she had, there's just too many other people that know that she knew that Brenda and Raymond were married.
So this wasn't like a, well, yeah, family, you would think. How do you think Raymond and Tammy crossed paths?
My aunt, they operated a bar. You know, they all started hanging out together at this bar. And then they eventually moved on to another bar called Pedro's. That was probably about 2 miles away. So they were all just going out and dancing and stuff together and having some fun.
Okay, just because they're all around the same age, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they're all around the same age.
That makes sense. And were Tammy and Brenda at this point, was it kind of like, hey, we're cousins, we're the same age, let's create this friendship, and then Raymond just kind of got in the middle of that?
As far as I know, I'm not really sure about how it started. Brenda wasn't a very open person. It took a while to get behind, you know, to get in there.
Right.
She had these walls for everybody, but, you know. But I do know, because I say I was underage, so my older sisters were there a lot, and I'm going off of what they tell me. You know, there'd be instances where they would just disappear from the bar, you know, at the same time. And my sisters had went to my Aunt Bonnie's house, which is Tammy's mother, and at one time had caught them at my Aunt Bonnie's house together.
So this was a known, it was kind of known that this was going on throughout the family. It wasn't, at some point before Brenda's disappearance, it wasn't that much of a secret.
Yeah, she knew. They had been sneaking around and getting caught. So I think she was trying to hold on to her marriage for a while, but she realized that he wasn't going to quit. And I believe there's a lot of manipulation that was thrown in there, kind of escalating things to the point where it got.
And where does Mark Cook enter the picture? Because he's all over her missing posters. So who is Mark and how does he enter the picture?
Well, Mark Cook was a guy that, you know, went to the same school as Brenda. They wasn't rubbing elbows or anything, but they were acquaintances, you know, friends. And he disappeared almost 6 months after Brenda did, on January 14th, 1993. There is little to nothing known about his case. Really, all we have is a lot of hearsay and, you know, nothing can be actually proven. I've heard, you know, rumors that he was asking the bar owner at Pedro's what happened to Brenda that night. And they said that he was beat up and thrown out for asking about her. And that is the same place that he disappeared from. I've also heard that, you know, he had an involvement in another crime and they took him out and they put him in a refinery and melted him down. And any place that has proof of this had already burnt down and all the evidence destroyed.
Wow. So it's a pretty small sized town where both Brenda and Mark disappeared from.
Yes. Yes. It's a lot of people will call it Bluefield, but it's actually, she disappeared in Bluewell. He disappeared in Brush Fork, but it was only, you know, a mile from each other.
And do you think it's connected?
I'm still unsure. I lean more towards yes until, and you know, I spent a long time with Daryl Bailey at Mercer County Sheriff's Department, and we talked a lot, and we went over so many things over and over and over, and he said that someone would have to show him proof that they're not. that he can't say for sure, but to absolutely convince him that they're not connected, someone would have to show him proof. And I stand with that. I can't say that they are, but, you know, I can't say that they're not. And nobody can. Really, nobody can, because the only thing we have either side is just hearsay. And when someone shows me the proof, either way, I'll believe it completely.
Well, in small towns and rumors, I know how that goes. It travels like wildfire, and it becomes this lore, like a legend in a small town.
Well, the person who started the rumor that Brenda and Mark ran off together is someone who would not want Brenda to be found either.
Mm.
And I have found out that much, you know, just from my own investigation and talking to multiple people. People who don't even know each other are telling me that same story. So I knew Brenda never ran off. And, you know, if they did, why would they wait 6 months?
Right. Why would they wait 6 months? And it sounds like Brenda was an involved mother who wouldn't have left her children.
Well, but she had an appointment with a lawyer at the end of July to go seek custody and to file for a divorce. And my sister heard Raymond tell her that he would kill her before he would let her have the house and the kids. So, yeah, she did. And, you know, there was 3 days before she disappeared, he was keeping her kids from her at his mother's. And she got frustrated, and she said, if you don't give me my kids, I'm going to tell things on you and your family that's going to have you guys put away for the rest of your lives.
Oh, wow. She was a brave
and
girl.
She was feisty, but she wanted her kids.
She wanted to be.
And they were thinking of her.
Mm.
And she popped and she exploded. I guess I've probably done a whole lot worse.
Same.
If my husband was trying to keep my kids from me.
Same. I totally understand that. Like, sometimes my husband talks to my daughter sideways, and she's being mouthy and she kind of needs it, but I've been with her all day and I'm ready to fight him. So I totally get it.
It happens with the grandkids too, like, don't you even, you know.
Right.
And Brenda was that really overprotective mother, you know. You was not going to disrespect her kids. You were not going to get hateful to them. You know, it's stuff like that. And you just know your person. And she was looking forward to Krista's first year of school. She had already had her outfits picked out, and she was showing everyone. And, you know, she had these cute little hair bows that matched Krista's socks. And she was so anxious. She was so excited about that.
It's been over 30 years since Brenda vanished. So what has taken place in her investigation? How was it handled? And where is it today?
Oh, goodness. The last that I heard from them was they are looking into new technology. Brenda is, and we've always heard that she was put on the family property that also contains a sawmill.
Oh, wow.
My mom and dad were so convinced of this that when they died, they bought plots maybe 2 minutes away just to be as close to her, you know, upon their death as they could get.
Oh.
And where they all still are, you know?
Oh, that's hard. So they do believe there is a spot, and I'm assuming they just can't get permission to check that property.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
And they don't have enough, I guess, to go check it themselves without getting the permission, essentially.
Well, you know, just like with Mark Cook, there's absolutely no DNA evidence whatsoever. There's not even been a hair on either one of their heads found. There's no witnesses to them actually being taken, because it both happened when they were all alone in the middle of the night.
And essentially, there's no crime scene.
Exactly. Like, they did Lumen on Brenda's house, but they, you know, apparently didn't find anything. You know, but when, you know, Kelly Siegler came in and she did this whole workup, she told us that there is enough circumstantial evidence that would convict.
There's enough circumstantial evidence. So they feel like they investigated this well enough that they feel like they have enough circumstantial evidence, but they just don't have enough to pull the trigger to bring charges against Raymond, assuming.
Raymond. What we were told was that, you know, Joe Parks, he was the cop that came in, and he was a saint. And he's the one who, you know, kind of put it all out there and, you know, got Mysterious West Virginia to do it. And, you know, he okayed Code Justice to come do it. So he was absolute rare, one of a kind, you know.
That is rare.
When he went in after the, you know, Kelly and Steve's and his investigation, when they went in, he was asking for a second degree murder charge, and the judge was so impressed that he gave him a first degree murder warrant.
Oh, wow. However, that didn't get anybody to the property.
No, it didn't. And they don't want to pursue it because they're afraid that West Virginia, you know, it only had, they said only one case has been one without a body, but I know now there's been several one without a body. But they're afraid of the whole double jeopardy.
Right. That's a hard one. Yeah, that's a hard one. And we are seeing more nobody cases win, but yeah, I mean, you are taking a huge chance when you go with the nobody case. Yeah.
You are, and I mean, I understand it, but I mean, there's just some things I think, personally, I would, I guess, kind of sacrifice just to have a chance at getting Brenda's remains back. That is the most important thing to me. It's getting her back. I don't like her being just tossed into a hole and left alone. I want to bury her beside of our mother. And that was our mom's last wish was, you know, when you find Brenda, please lay her beside of me.
While accountability is an important part of Brenda's justice, at this point, Brenda's family is willing to risk it all just to bring her home.
In fact, I've told the prosecuting attorney that I would not even care if whoever wants to confess and give her back to us, if they never got a day in jail, it wouldn't bother me. And that's not me being okay with murderers walking the streets, because I don't think they're ever going to be brave enough to try anything again after the spotlight they've been under. But there is just something when you have a missing loved one. No amount of jail time is going to soothe not having them. And it is a sacrifice for a lot of people. I guess I can say it like that, but, you know, it's just the point that I want her home. We want her home. We want to bury her properly and be able to go visit her. And she deserves that.
Yeah, she does. Her children deserved that. They deserve answers.
Yeah. And, you know, well, I don't know if her daughter is deceased, but her daughter did put in a lot of time trying to find her mom. She would call us over the years crying, saying she wants her mom. She had her DNA stored in CODIS with me. She was, you know, actively looking for her mom's burial site as well. Yeah, she was so tormented. She left behind three children of her own, and she was pregnant when she died.
It's hard to grow up without your mama. And it's even harder to grow up not knowing what happened to your mama.
Oh, yeah. You know, and then you've got the things that you've seen. And she said that when she was five, you know, the night her mother disappeared, she watched her daddy drag her mommy through her grandma's backyard. So she was really tortured.
Something I continuously observe while working with these families is the grassroots justice effort that they have to make to get their family justice. It's not a club anybody wants to be in. And when you become part of this club of missing and murdered loved ones, there's no handbook. There's no right way to do it. There's no place you go that someone can tell you what the next steps are. These families have to create the next step, often on their own, while at the same time reaching out to other families they see struggling to teach them what they know. I asked Christy, what is it that we can do to be a part of her grassroots justice for Brenda?
The best thing is to just share her information, share her story, not only for her, but to maybe help other women and even, you know, younger women just, you know the signs to look out for. I'm hoping, I know I can't bring Brenda back to life, but I'm hoping that her story can help save other people. I mean, it saves me in my own personal life. I've taught my daughter, my granddaughters, you know, they'll be taught to sharing. I will have a petition drawn up soon. Just kind of asking for, more support from our state and our local law enforcement to really start digging into this and find out what happens, what's going on with our missing people here.
Do you guys have a cold case unit in West Virginia in your area? I don't think so either. I can't think of one.
And, it would be very nice if every state would jump on board to having an actual missing persons unit, like a cold case unit, but just maybe revamped a little bit and just more. There's just so many, I don't know, people don't know missing person laws. They're still thinking that they have to wait so long to file a missing persons report, and you don't.
Right. That's been a huge change. And there's no place to go. I talk to families all the time that, your loved one is missing, and already you're just like, how can an entire human that I love vanish? But then you go and you don't know the steps to take until you're in it, because who is educated on that? And there is no place to go to get this. There's no like, okay, someone's missing, this is where I go. It's just, it does not work that way. And we need that in the communities.
We really do. We need it everywhere because, we were that family too. We were like, oh my God, what are we supposed to do? And, we tried to sit back and let law enforcement handle everything. And, that just proven just to be bad. And being silent is not a good thing either.
Right. No. And it's because law enforcement is, they only have so much they can do. And all of a sudden, there's all these things that you wish you knew then. You wish you knew, but you have to find another family who's already been through it to know it.
Yeah, and it's going to take people like you and families of the missing. We're all going to have to just band together and make enough noise to where other people, it just becomes common knowledge, because this is not a life that anyone should have to live.
No.
Mm-mm. And this can happen to anyone. Even when Brenda, before she disappeared, we'd all sit down as a family watching Unsolved Mysteries, but it never occurred to us that we would be living that.
Right. It seems so out of touch, like a different world.
It really does. And, when it does happen to you, it is a different world. And it clicks like, oh my God, it really could have happened to us. And it throws the whole family for generations into a downward spiral.
Something I always try to make sure we acknowledge is the generational and family impact of a missing and murdered loved one. It is a ripple effect that not only goes through family, friends, loved ones, but also through generations.
It affected my mother so bad that she developed cancer from one end of her body to the other.
Oh, it was eating and her alive.
Yeah, it did. It ate her alive. I mean, that kind of trauma and grief does cause cancer cells. And that is something we learned, back in the early 90s or mid 90s from Duke University. And it's not just, hey, my person's missing, we don't know where they're at. I mean, there's just so much to it. And I just want people to be aware of that it can really happen to anyone. And it's not as clear cut as it seems. Because I've got grandkids now. And one of my granddaughters was 6, and she said, Mama, I look for Brenda's bones when I go in the woods. Aww. And she picked up on something that I didn't think that she would pick up on. So here it is, the third generation down, and it's just still going. It's in their minds.
Right. Well, it's affected the way you've raised your children, the way that you'll watch your grandchildren. It's affected the way that you looked at the world, and it's going to affect the way that they look at the world because of how you look at the world.
Exactly. And my daughter, and I've probably become extremely overprotective, but she grew up under that protectiveness. And I feel like sometimes I shouldn't have been as protective, but then I feel like if I would let my guard down, something could have happened to her, So
right.
it's kind of a struggle, and it's a battle. Like, I don't trust my grandkids playing out in the yard anymore, and you look around everywhere and there's kids being snatched from their yards. It has been for a very long time. It's just we're not made aware of things like that.
Right. And if we are aware of it, again, we feel like it's not going to happen here.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, we thought that too. My mom was a true crime buff. I remember I was 5 years old when I seen my first missing person, and that was Adam Walsh.
Really?
So I grew up in that too.
So your family was very aware of it. Was your mom always like super protective and like, you guys can't be by yourself over here and stick close? And
yes. And you know, there's times in my life I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, I need people to get this, you know, and it just makes me mad that they're not realizing it. But I realize we were that family too.
Right. Until it touches your doorstep. And we need to have resources so that when it does touch your doorstep, there's somewhere to go. And it has to be done. There has to be a way we can do it. And I know I've been talking this talk for 5 years and we're just.
It's a hard process. I mean, it is not something like I've been in this for almost 32 years and I've had very few people to actually get it.
Right.
And, you know, it frightens people, but it doesn't never sink in. Like I said, like, you know, it's a very hard process because for some reason, and, you know, we were guilty of it too, you just cannot get your mind open to it.
Right.
Until it happens to you.
Yeah.
It's almost like a car wreck. Like you're just driving down the road and all of a sudden you hit something.
Right. It's almost like you never expect to get in your car and get in an accident that day, but then it happens. And then we have all the things in place for when it happens. We have a response team. We have a place to go. We have advocates for you at the hospital when you get in an accident. We have all those things in place, but we as a society do not have in place when your child, your sister, your mother goes missing. We don't have anything in place for that.
Exactly. And I mean, you've got a lot of law enforcement agencies out here that will still want to tell people you got to wait this long. Like, no, you don't. And I'll be first to tell them, and I don't care. Like, I back the glue, but we got to do this the right way. I know how these families feel.
Right. And you know what? If we report someone missing and they're not missing and we find out they're not missing, okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that if they're not missing, great. I'm relieved to hear that. I wish they would not just, you know, disappear on their own free will. And
right.
Never tell nobody because it makes it hard on law enforcement. It makes it hard on the families. But when they're found, that's a great thing.
Right. It doesn't matter how they went missing or when they went missing. If we find them, it's great. It should just be in place. Like if someone calls and says, this isn't normal, this isn't their behavior, it needs to be taken seriously at that point in time that this isn't normal and this isn't their behavior. I don't care if it's been an hour since I've seen them. This isn't normal. This isn't their behavior.
Exactly. You know, there's a lot of different circumstances. I do believe that families should at least try to make contact.
Right.
You know, you can take an hour, try to call everybody they know, go to their house, have somebody else go to their house. You know, and if they're nowhere to be seen, then yeah, I would call law enforcement.
Right.
But at least attempt to find them. Because some people, they, you know, they really will, like if they're, you know, say their teenage kid is an hour late from getting home, you know, they will immediately call the law. And that makes it harder when you don't try to find them or make contact.
Right.
If you jump the gun and you've got several people doing that all the time or, you know, several times a day, I mean, law enforcement cannot take on that.
No, like, they can't. They're not built like that. But then you have the flip side where people are going to sit there and say, well, why'd you wait 2 hours to call law enforcement if you thought they were missing? So it's just like you can't win. You cannot win.
You can't. And it's like I was telling you, you know, I love to post funny things and stuff like that because that is my release from my entire life being nothing but murder and mayhem. And, you know, people are going to draw conclusions about you and, you know, you just can't, it's not a one size fits all thing.
No. Mm-mm. And it changes consistently throughout. That's the only consistency you have in missing and murdered cases is change.
It really does. It's not a stable environment. You constantly, like, I've been wronged about so much, you know, and I've had to, you know, train myself to see the proof. Over and over and think it through because, you know, when you do get anxious and your mind does take off on you when you're in these positions and, you know, it's easy to believe whatever you hear or, you know, just kind of jump the gun on stuff.
Right. And so you got to take care of this whole hole in your heart and your soul because you have someone missing, but then life is spinning around you and it's still moving.
Yes. Like, you know, I got pregnant with my daughter and I had to raise my daughter and, you know, I know you know, with kids, it's 24/7.
All the time.
Yeah, so there was times that I could not put the effort on Brenda. I wanted to. I was constantly thinking about her. I'd sit down for a couple minutes and maybe, you know, see if I couldn't contact somebody. But for the most part, you know, it was hard to find time, especially when you have little kids. Or just really, even if you don't, people's lives are busy. People have busy lives.
They do. They have, it's a, it, life doesn't stop moving.
It's getting busier.
Right. Like your world feels like it stops. But the rest of the, like you look, you all open your front door and the world is still moving. And it makes no sense that the world could still move when this person isn't here. Like it just makes no sense. But you have to keep going.
You do have to keep going. And, you know, your loved ones would want you to keep going.
Right.
And, you know, my mom and Brenda and my dad, they would not want me to sit here and just give up on life. They want me to enjoy my life, you know. But I know they want me to fight for them too. So it's, you know, it's just something you got to balance.
Right. Well,
and don't feel guilty when you can't, because there's a lot of families that absolutely they go down into the pits of depression because, you know, they have to quit working on their family member's case to take care of something in their personal life. But that's normal. It's okay to live a life and still want to find your loved one and put forth effort into that.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I know that there's some family members that need to hear that. I tell them that all the time. You know, I'm not in their shoes, but I tell them, like, if you need to step back, you got to step back. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're veterans and, you know, every now and then we still kind of beat ourselves up over things. But, you know, we come, that's just the emotional highs and lows of having a missing loved one. But in reality, that's just your mind and your loved ones still love you from afar. They know that you're doing your best, and they want you to live that life. Don't feel guilty.
You can't. It's a wasted energy.
It is, and you can take, you know, they just need to know their loved ones wouldn't want them feeling like that. It's still going to happen, but hopefully, you know, they can, like we had to get in our heads that, you know, Brenda, she knows that we're doing everything that we can. And she knows that it would never happen to her because I've been asked a lot, like, why wasn't y'all there? And I'm like, it don't work that way. There would be nobody missing if their family members knew it was going to happen.
Right, right. You can't let the guilt eat you.
Yeah, we would have been there with an army. And these other families would have too. They wouldn't have just know that nobody knows that their family member's going to go missing and just sits back and thinks, okay, that's why there's many of us.
There are just too many out there missing that need to come home. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit with Christy and I and listen and learn about Brenda today. I will be adding Christy's social media setup for Brenda. Please go visit those pages, spread some love, and keep an eye out for that petition. I will, of course, have links up once that is available. And don't forget, every time you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to hit like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.